If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle.
You know what can make breakups even harder than they already are? PMS. I don't know about you, but my PMS gives me such bad anxiety, racing thoughts, and a lot of bloating, all of which is a recipe to make a breakup feel that much more intense. To help combat my PMS symptoms, I've been loving Estro Control by Happy Mammoth, a supplement company dedicated to making women's lives easier. Estro Control contains science-backed herbal extracts that help support hormonal health, especially in women who suffer from PMS. I was so interested to learn how this supplement worked. It actually helps support the liver, which is where hormones are processed. And when estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, that's what causes those awful PMS symptoms. So to help combat your PMS symptoms, I highly recommend Estro Control so you're not robbed of a week of your life every single month. Not fair. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today.
Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome back to another expert episode of the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Today I have Steph Sarazin, who is an ambiguous grief expert, which we will fully get into what ambiguous grief is in this episode. Steph shares her journey into discovering what that is after being in a very happy 20-year marriage. Found out that there was chronic infidelity for a long time within the relationship. So we talk about what does it mean to go through grief that doesn't have any societal norms to it. So when someone passes away, we have a funeral, there's rituals involved. When you go through a breakup or a divorce or you lose your job or things like that, what do we do with that? There's not a guidebook like there is in other aspects. So we talk about what that means. We talk about the importance of rituals when going through a breakup. We talk about hope and how hope can be good. And it can also be really dangerous when it comes to recovering from a breakup. We also talk about how important it is for grief to be witnessed, that it should not be something that you do on your own, and how to cultivate that. So I love talking to Steph. I feel like we will definitely chat again on another episode. I encourage everyone to go get her book, Soul Broken. I included the link in the show notes and can't wait for you guys to hear our chat. Welcome, Steph, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Very excited to have you. We've already been talking before we started recording, and I was like, I need to hit record before we go any further because I'm already having so much fun talking to you. So thank you for coming on.
I'm so happy to be here, Kendra. Thanks for having me. And more importantly, thank you for the work that you're doing. It's important and it's needed. So please keep going.
Thank you. Thank you. And you were introduced to me by Shelby Forsythia, who is a friend of the podcast, did an episode. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad she connected us. I always like to hear people's stories of what brought them to what they're doing. And in your case, ambiguous grief, which is honestly not a term I had heard until starting to look into you, but I would love to hear your journey into this. I know it's probably not a fun one since this is what we're talking about, mm-hmm. but I would love to, you know, kind of hear some background.
Sure, thanks. And you know, I'm guessing you'll find it not too dissimilar to your own. My work began out of necessity, really, out of a need to feel better and to understand what I was experiencing, but could find no resources, not a book on the shelf, not a friend of a friend who could say, yes, I've been there. And what I was looking for was help through a devastating divorce. You know, the kind of penultimate breakup that I'd been married for almost 20 years and was living a life I absolutely loved in a marriage I adored, you know, and that all changed in the blink of an eye. Not to be dramatic, but really in an instant, I discovered that my marriage wasn't what I thought it was. And it was, in fact, chronic infidelity that had been going on for quite some time and to which I was absolutely oblivious. And that was really difficult, of course, for a number of reasons. Not, you know, small among them was my own sense of ability to trust myself, my own intelligence. You know, how did I miss this? And, you know, in that experience, which was 8 years ago now, I was just so isolated. And I knew that I was feeling grief, but I didn't know why it was different. That makes any sense. I knew this was grief and I was experiencing all of this emotional and physical pain as I went through the divorce process. But it wasn't until I got a little more curious about exactly what made this different, did I come to understand that when you're grieving somebody who's still living, there are no societal norms that we can engage, right? There's no obituary to write. I'm not selecting pallbearers. Where are my casseroles, people?
I was literally just going to say casseroles. No one's bringing casseroles over. Yes.
Right. And, you know, to my fault in this, I didn't tell anybody except a trusted friend and a brand new therapist I found the day after, because I didn't talk about it, Kendra, because I didn't want to be talked about. And so, you know, that's something I have heard from people over and over again since I've started talking about this and writing about it, is that if shame or embarrassment are internalized as part of the end of the relationship, then that griever tends to isolate and grieve alone, but it doesn't have to be that way. So since my own experience, I've been just kind of working to get a little more clear on what makes this different, why does it feel different, and then what can we do to help one another when we go through it, or to help support somebody else who might be going through it. And it may not be, you know, exclusively from a breakup. Ambiguous grief is that grief without societal norms and someone still living. So that could be, you know, an incarcerated loved one with addiction or identity change, you know, a whole host of things, Alzheimer's, dementia. And, you know, that person isn't who they once were, but they're still out there in the world living.
That's so interesting. You said like a little brief definition of ambiguous grief of grief without societal norms. So, I mean, could this be like just a life change of losing a job that maybe you didn't know, or is it something with a particular person?
No, it's absolutely exactly what you said. That's so wise because, you know, we have lost so much throughout the course of our lifespan, right? Our best friend who moves away, but our pain kind of goes unacknowledged or, you know, they're there, minimized. You know, we lose parts of ourselves, whether it's, you know, being downsized from a job, moving to a different community, and a whole host of reasons that we grieve. Empty nesting is another one where, again, our roles are changing. And yet in our society, there's nothing that we do that really, you know, is a societal norm that says, oh, well, this is what this is. And let's celebrate this. Let's honor this. So ritual has become very important to me as a healing modality.
Yeah, no, this is very interesting because, yeah, I'm sure you could make a list of 1,000 different things that would cause ambiguous grief. But, you know, I'm just thinking of something. Let's say, okay, you know, a loved one I have is incarcerated. Mm-hmm. There's not really like, can't imagine there's a book on that. Maybe there is, but I'm just thinking, I'm sure there's not a lot of information on those sorts of things. So, it does make it, I'm sure the internet has opened a lot of doors for this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now there's TikToks and things for every situation, but not easy to find. So it makes sense that you would feel very lost in I have no idea where to even turn for this being an issue.
Exactly. And something that I found in myself and then eventually in others, I developed and deployed a survey to try to get more information. And within 2 weeks, I had over 400 respondents coming back and saying, you know, talking about their ambiguous grief, not knowing that it had a name. And this was something that I kind of formulated as a, you know, kind of out of Dr. Pauline Boss's work with ambiguous loss, which she had started back in the 90s, and she coined the term ambiguous loss, where her patients were, she's a therapist, and her patients that she was seeing, you know, they're grieving, or should they not grieve, their spouses who are missing in action, you know, or their family members who are at war and missing in action, or, you know, kidnapping is another kind of form of ambiguous loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, so a physical presence, but psychological absence. You know, these are things where we don't know if our loved one is still living. So we kind of, like, our grief is in purgatory is how I, you know, understood that work. And then, so back 8 years ago, when I was looking for support, this was Dr. Boss's incredible work was the closest I could find to what I was feeling. But I very well knew that the person I was grieving was very much alive. And so it was my grief that was ambiguous, not my loss per se. So what do you do with that grief? And what I found as I started talking to and interviewing people from all sorts of onsets, activating events for their ambiguous grief, there was such an interesting presence that kept emerging. And this is what makes ambiguous grief different than grief with a physical death, is that, of course, societal norms is one, but the second is hope. Hope appears. The experience of hope, and don't get me wrong, hope is a great thing. It is a beautiful thing. It's a virtue in, you know, Catholicism. It is something we need to get through this human experience. But what I have found is that for ambiguous grievers, hope can be as dangerous as it is good.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, it does this interesting thing where it puts us kind of looking externally for healing, because we want to, because our loved one hasn't died a physical death. So in our breakups, in our divorces, in our separations, in our life changes, we think, well, they're still there. There's still hope. Let me figure out how to get them back. What do I need to do? How do I get them help? How do I change me to get them back? Even if you're trying to change yourself to get them back, which always reminds me of Sandy in Greece, right? Like changing yourself. Nonsense, but at any rate,
I'm laughing because I literally just introduced this Grease soundtrack to my son a couple days ago, so it's very top of mind.
I love it, right? And it's a terrific musical, but you know, as a grown-up, I look back on that and I think, oh wow, like nobody was telling her, do you really need to do that? But when we're focused on changing our situation so that we can restore the relationship as it once was, we're not working on our own healing. And so for ambiguous grievers, it's tricky though, Kendra, because it feels so good to be in action toward fixing the problem, right? Like, okay, my guy was this, so let me see if I can help fix him here. Or, you know, and so we get our hands in and we start researching and finding things that we think will help them, because that will help restore the relationship, when in fact, that external hope is, you know, hope is a double agent, I say, and it works both sides. Instead of helping us heal, it takes us further and further away from healing, in fact. And then we run the risk of identifying by our loss, by our breakup. And that can become dangerous for other reasons, and to which point you're then in a complicated grief situation or a prolonged grief disorder, and you need extracted, like it's like quicksand. You have to be, a professional has to come and help you kind of get out of that. And so focusing on internal hope, you know, which you talk about so much on the show, is focusing on yourself and what you can do for you, going no contact, turning inward. And it's uncomfortable and it's hard. So of course, I understand why we look to external hope first.
I was vigorously nodding away when you were talking, but yeah, I mean, hope is such an interesting thing when it comes to a breakup, because yes, I wish I could instill everyone to have hope that things are going to be okay, because they will. But the hope of getting back together or fixing it is, it can be so destructive. And you're right. I've never actually thought about it like that, where it feels so good to be productive in quote unquote fixing the issue, because like healing on your own from a breakup doesn't feel productive at the time. It feels so slow moving. I mean, it doesn't, you're not getting these immediate responses or results. So getting, you know, moving towards a goal of getting back together feels good. And I can see why people do it. I mean, I've tried to do that in past situations, but in my opinion, you're not only delaying it, but you're also setting yourself back from the actual healing, because it's like you first have to admit that there's a problem. The problem is you guys have broken up. But if you don't think that's a problem, because in your mind you're going to get back together, you're not even scratching the surface of what it means to heal from the breakup.
Right. Great point. Instead, you know, taking that time to be with your feelings, as uncomfortable as that might sound, and really feel it, is a preferred first step, I think. And, you know, something that you and I had talked about in the minute just before you hit record is the overlap here between what we're both doing, right? Is that grief is one of these things I've come to find out that, you know, while we all experience grief, and in fact, my data shows 94% of us will experience ambiguous grief at least once in our lifetime. And how many breakups will we have, whether it's a breakup with a romantic partner or a best friend or a family member, right? Estrangement is another big indicator of activating event for ambiguous grief. You know, it's not something we're taught how to do. We're not taught how to go through a breakup. At least I wasn't, and my peers weren't, you know, and even when I was going through my divorce 8 years ago, it was so hard to find anybody to talk to about it who, you know, when I finally did start to speak out and look for some support, you know, nobody knew anybody who had the experience. And so I think that, you know, for anybody listening, I just hope you're gentle with yourself, because it's likely you weren't taught how to go through a breakup, and it's likely you weren't taught about grief and grieving and loss, and both are natural, normal human experiences. So my hope is that the more we talk about it openly and honestly, the more helpful we can be to one another when we're supporting someone or when it happens in our own lives.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And one thing that you slightly touched on, but I wanted to go back to, is the role of shame and how that's different in ambiguous grief versus traditional grief. And not to undermine someone who loses someone to death. However, I don't feel like there's a lot of situations where, similar to you, where people don't want to talk about someone dying because they feel shame about it, you know? Whereas a breakup, I hear about that a lot, where people feel a lot of shame and they don't want to, even if they're the ones that got broken up with and they logically know it wasn't them, it feels embarrassing. It feels like this person chose to leave me. So can you talk about the role of shame?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, shame and embarrassment, again, are these two universal feelings that we experience. And depending on our own situation, it can just make things so much worse, you know, because to your point, whether you're the person who has left the relationship or you're the person who was broken up with, you know, both are valid. Your grief is valid, whether you chose the divorce or to end the relationship, or it was not a choice, right? It is grief. Grief is grief. And so, but when shame and embarrassment are involved, it's an added layer that kind of puts our walls up, right? We mm-hmm. put bubble wrap, we build some walls, and we're really careful about who knows what. In today's, you know, ever-present high technology world where information shares, you know, in just a second, it's understandable why we think, I don't want to talk to anybody about this right now, or I need to be careful, or I feel more shame because so-and-so is going to find out, you know? So there are a whole host of things that can activate those feelings of shame and embarrassment. And social media, I think, has a lot to do with it, because, you know, what I found interesting is I started looking at our endings. You know, we don't honor our endings like we do our beginnings. And I invite anybody listening to take a look at social media on any given day and count the number of, you know, engagements that are posted, new businesses, you know, oversized scissors, the whole thing, gender reveals, weddings, everything. And then those are wonderful ceremonies and rituals that should be celebrated. Yes, 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 of course. But, you know, other side of that, sometimes the businesses don't work out and they file bankruptcy and close their doors, or the marriage ends in divorce, the relationship ends, there's trouble with the pregnancy, right? You know, miscarriage, infertility, these are all incredibly painful experiences that are common. And yet, you know, we don't put them on social media. I'm not saying we should, right? Yeah. It's a private, personal choice. But when we see all of the happiness over and over, you know, I think there's a part of us that gets conditioned to feel like, well, am I airing my dirty laundry if I put this up on, you know, social media? Or is this going to get back to this person and then I'm going to be perceived? And we start wondering, well, what are they going to think of me? And that's not my intention. So I don't, you know, and that again can add more embarrassment. And of course, again, because your loved one hasn't died, social media also is a gateway for
them to see,
peeking in on their life. It's a two-way street. So they might be able to see what you're doing. And if you're externally focused, you for sure are checking in with them and their friends to see what's going on there. And again, to your point, which is spot on, in my opinion, that delays healing.
Yeah. Not to mention, if we're going back to hope, if you're holding on to hope that you and your ex will get back together, you are not going to be honest with your close friends about the actual state of the relationship.
100%. And that, I raise my hand because that was something in the initial few weeks of my discovery that I didn't want anybody to know, because I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know, I needed to get my bearings. And, you know, if you're blindsided in a breakup, if you are betrayed in a breakup, that, as you know, adds an added nuance to the whole experience and how we choose to navigate it. And you are not alone. If you are sitting quietly, not telling anybody about your betrayal because you don't want your partner judged or you haven't made your decision yet, you are not alone. And it's a horrible, terrible place to be and to feel that way as you try to figure out what to do. But it is, we're protecting our partner and we think we're protecting our relationship, but really what we're doing is protecting the image that we want to portray about our relationship. That's a hard difference to swallow.
Yeah, I know. It's so interesting. I've just never really thought about, you know, when you're talking about someone who's passed away, you're not worried about them finding, you know, you're not worried about them finding out. And, you know, there is this element of closure, you know, unless there's situations where you're waiting for justice, if there was, you know, bad doings on that end. But for the most part, you're getting like a pretty significant amount of closure, where with this, it's, will this person come back? Will they see what I'm doing? It's so much more things to think about and manage on top of already being exhausted from being emotionally exhausted, on top of trying to put energy into making yourself feel better. But I think it's so true, that element of social media. And I've seen a little bit, maybe it's the side of the internet I'm on, but I feel like I've seen a little bit more where people will have divorce parties and things like that. You know, I would love to hear from you. What are some, you said rituals are really important to you. What are some rituals we can pull from maybe more traditional forms of grief into the space of ambiguous grief?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And thank you for asking that, because, you know, I think that when we are in tune and quiet and just kind of dialed into our own needs, our intuition will tell us, kind of point us in the right direction. I didn't know that, but I've come to learn that. And for me, I found myself in this really weird kind of twilight zone space where I was kind of fantasizing is the wrong word, but I was kind of just envious of widows, which is really gross to even say, because, and I mean that with no disrespect to a widow who is grieving the loss of their spouse. That's a horrible situation and it's incredibly painful. as I've supported friends in that position. And I found myself feeling like, oh, but if I were, had he died, I would have been able to stand up in front of our friends and family and proclaim my love and share with them our relationship and, you know, thank them for their support, you know, just the basics. Yeah. And what I understood later is that, you know, grief is something that needs to be witnessed, like love. We don't keep love quiet. Our relationships, we share because it's meant to be shared. And so is grief. And so when grief isn't witnessed, we're not processing it. We're not able to integrate it into ourselves so that we can continue to live. We don't move on from grief. We have to integrate it to this new part of us as a new part of us as we go forward. And so ritual helps us do that. And rituals have been, you know, a part of the human experience for over a millennia, two millennia. It is, I mean, it's incredible the amount of, you know, social science and archaeology, there's incredible discoveries each year about, you know, going later and later to when funerals were happening. And so for me, I felt like I needed a funeral for my marriage. And so I wrote one. I call it a faux funeral. I talk about it often. I wrote about it in my book, Soul Broken, and I teach people how to develop a faux funeral for their relationship, whether, again, whether you chose to end the relationship, you still have the right to grieve, right? Yep. Or you're in an estranged relationship, your partner just never came home one day and moved in with somebody else, right? Or any myriad of how it might happen. A faux funeral, I invited my two closest friends who had known my marriage best. I wrote it as if I were going to deliver it to, you know, a room full of people, as I would have had there been a death, a physical death. But there was a death, and breakups are a death of a relationship. And so I planned music. I picked the beautiful site, you know, next to a lake. I read a poem that was meaningful. And then, you know, Kendra, a transformational part of it happened at the end when I stood and my two friends each spoke to me, just hugged me and spoke one-on-one as if it felt like I had a receiving line of 500 people, when in fact it was just the two of them. But hearing them say that they admired my marriage, that they were so sorry, it transformed something in me. It unlocked my healing in a way that I hadn't yet experienced. And so I encourage people to find whatever meaningful ritual might help them and have it witnessed. Find a trusted friend who can bear witness to your grief and to your loss.
The holidays can be a time of a lot of dining out, takeout, or heavy meals in general, and it feels really nice to get a break from that and have a nice, easy meal prepped at home, which is why I love CookUnity. Whether you need a break from cooking, like me, or you're looking for a gift for someone who could use a break from cooking, CookUnity is a great option. Their meals are crafted from local, farm-fresh ingredients and deliver vibrant flavors directly to your door. My favorite meal I've had from them recently is the California-style chicken enchiladas by Chef Kevin Meehan. I love that I can see the chefs behind the meals. It makes the experience that much cooler. And truly the best part for me is the convenience. No shopping, no planning, no prepping, just getting to heat up my meal and be done with it. Give the gift of delivering mouth-watering meals crafted by local ingredients and award-winning chefs with CookUnity. Go to cookunity.com/heartbreak or enter code heartbreak before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code heartbreak or going to cookunity.com/heartbreak. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. The holidays are approaching, which I know can feel scary when you're going through a breakup. This may not be the way that you were envisioning to spend the holiday season, but I want to remind you that many of the winter comforts can still be accessible to you. Why not plan a holiday movie night with your friends or sign up to volunteer in your community for the day? Or set up a therapy session, which is a great way to bring yourself some comfort that never goes away, even when the season changes. During seasons where I've experienced loneliness or difficult life chapters, therapy has been a comfort I look forward to every week to sort things out and provide a new perspective. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Find comfort this December with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/heartbreak today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/heartbreak. For a gift that's always on time and lasts a lifetime, you can't do better than Masterclass. With Masterclass, your loved ones can learn from the best to become their best. Masterclass is the only streaming platform where you can learn and grow with over 200 of the world's best. That's why Wirecutter calls it an invaluable gift. Help them build life-changing habits with New York Times bestselling author James Clear, or learn about entrepreneurship from my personal idol, Sarah Blakely. Something that always helped me during my breakups was using that time and energy to improve myself and learn new things. With Masterclass, it's a great opportunity to explore new topics and find new interests. I hear all the time that post-breakup, you guys want to try out cooking, and there are so many great cooking classes. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/heartbreak for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/heartbreak. Masterclass.com/heartbreak.
That's so powerful. I've heard, you know, from over the years, a variety of ways people have done that, whether it's, you know, a bonfire with, you know, a couple friends and tossing some stuff into the fire, whatever that looks like. And I think that's so important that grief does need to be witnessed. And it's so often something that's fought in silence. What's your advice to people who are having a hard time opening up about... Maybe not even having a hard time, but I also know that people can be in this position, me included, where it feels like no one understands. No one understands what I'm going through. Like, you feel like you don't want to listen to friends because they're married or they have kids or, you know, they are not experiencing any of the same things you are. What's your advice to people who are going through that?
Yeah, two-part answer. Yeah. Number one, find your people. Find your people, because the nuances of your experience are what make your grief unique. For example, right? Was it a betrayal? Was it your choice? Are you angry, you know, and mad and revenge seeking? Like, where are you in your mindset, you know, in this? Or, you know, is your grief so profound because you're so deeply hurt because you so deeply loved, right? And I say that when you're grieving like this, it's kind of like getting stuck with the bill, right? Here, the two of you built this relationship, and this transcends ambiguous grief. It's physical death as well. You know, we're not going to grieve everybody we love, perhaps. If we may outlive everybody we love, and we're the last, you know, woman standing, and then we've grieved them all. Or we may grieve none of them. We may die tomorrow, because we know that that is just what life is. We know death is coming eventually. We don't know how, but we're resigned to that. And so understanding the nuances of your experience and finding your people can be really helpful. A second thing is to say, not everybody deserves your story. Not everybody has earned the right to know your story. And so no matter how you're feeling, if you're in your rage era, I get it. I was there too, right? But it's about how long you stay there. And are you around people who are keeping you there? And it's also hard too, because, you know, if your breakup is a part of a betrayal, people want to just smack talk your partner. They are mad. And it's kind of like, again, you're protecting that relationship. That's hard to hear. And then sometimes it's what you want to hear, but for a long time, it's probably not what you want to hear, because you love that person and you're hoping for restoration, right? Yeah. That's why you hurt so badly. And so, you know, finding your people, but also understanding what's okay for you and what isn't. Are these people listening? This is something else that we do as a grieving society that is just grief illiterate. We want people to feel better. So we just start talking. Oh, Kendra, you went through this. Let me tell you about Steph and her sister's neighbor, who also, it sounds a lot like your story. It doesn't, right? Yeah. Like, it's not, you're like, this doesn't help me. You're grieving, you're heartbroken, and you're hearing about somebody you don't know. And that doesn't help, but being a good listener does help. So finding your people, finding people who are, have your best interest in heart, and understand that what you need is probably a listening ear and support, and validation, right? Witnessing somebody's grief and just saying, that sounds so hard. I'm so sorry for your pain.
Yeah.
Means a lot to somebody grieving.
I also was thinking that I think what some people do too is you have to realize that sometimes people are projecting where, let's say, they hear that you went through infidelity, they're scared that's going to happen to them. So they're asking you questions, not so much with good intentions, but because they want to know why it happened, because they don't want it to happen to them, right? Does that, the projection thing happens too, I feel like.
Absolutely. And then what does that do to the person who's hurting? It could be a question that is just inappropriate, first of all, and
totally.
Then too personal and a whole host
and
of
judgmental
things.
Like, too. You didn't see that? How'd you not see
I'm
that?
Saying.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is why I felt like, I guess I'm naive and I lost so much, you know, in this discovery and my future, and then also an understanding of my past and what was real and what wasn't. And also am I not kind of with it and like kind of bright that how did I miss it? And what I have found is that, again, that is that I internalized that and owned it, but I wasn't supposed to find out. It was supposed to be hidden. It was very well hidden, as it is in all cases, most cases, I should say.
Yeah.
And so I hope that we can be easier and more kind to ourselves and not beat ourselves up. And so being around friends who are asking these pervasive questions, to your point, because they're projecting, because they want to know what they should be looking for, because they're, you know,
they're scared.
And also, right, you can tell, like, are they trying to get the scoop? Are they trying to get information? Or are they trying to be helpful? And so I think something I encourage people to do, and what ultimately I began to do, was to say, thank you for your care. Find a tagline. However you want to say it, whatever's comfortable for you, build a boundary, because, you know, hopefully those questions won't come, but it's likely you're going to get a couple.
Yeah.
And it's so icky, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. I mean, this is so unrelated, but in my current life, I have twins now. And so I'm walking around with twins, and you'd be shocked at how many people ask if I had twins, because I did IVF, or do you have those naturally? Like, people at the grocery store will ask these questions, but I'm like, wow, this is really personal for someone I don't know, you know? So, but it is very interesting, the things people will ask. And even, you know, if we're talking about traditional grief, I see like a TikTok about someone who's passed away, and in the comments, people are like, what happened? What happened? What happened? You know, and there are people trying to get the scoop on things. And, you know, I get humans are curious, but at the end of the day, it is your story to share. And if a question's not going to make you feel good, you shouldn't have to be fielding it.
Exactly. Yes. And so finding your people, checking in on who helps you feel better and who doesn't, you know, is a great kind of checklist to decide who doesn't, and not everybody does. And, you know, your shows like yours and the courses you offer, and hopefully books like mine, you know, where we're talking about this in a respectful, not salacious environment, like you and I both came to this work out of a need, because it wasn't being talked about. And I think that we can have hard conversations around sensitive topics and be kind to one another in, you know, oh, that's not something I really feel comfortable answering. Or, you know, just our discourse with one another about, that's how we're going to learn and teach each other, hopefully, like what's appropriate, what isn't.
Yeah.
And then I see just more and more people kind of coming into this conversation as I've been, you know, going through the years. And I'd like to think that things are shifting just a tiny bit.
Yeah. I was going to ask, do you see a few where there are societal norms around losing a job, a failing company, a divorce? Do you feel like there will be a time where that's a thing?
I hope so, because it used to be a thing, right? Ritual comes from, you know, our ancestry. And there are so many things that we can do, and that is done all around the world. But it's just our eyebrows raised here. Yes, absolutely. You know, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. Whether, to your point, you're going out and, you know, you're burning things in a bonfire, you're doing a releasing ceremony under a, you know, a moon. If that feels good to you, do it. If it's, you know, a ritual can also be a bath or a shower and releasing, you know, love them, bless them, let them go is a mantra that I repeated probably 100,000 times in the first few years. Love them, bless them, let them go. Love them, bless them, let them go. And that's a ritual in the shower that you can do. And shower, the water is, you know, cleansing and baptism, and has so much meaning.
Yeah.
You know, in herbs and crystals and scents, nature. There's so many different ways. This doesn't have to be anything elaborate, and you don't need to be, you know, a shaman or certified in some way in ritual practice. It's just about creating a space, creating a place where you can bring some structure to talk about your loss in a way that feels beautiful and helpful to you.
Yeah.
And again, you know, as you know, it's little by little the healing happens. It isn't, there's not like a, you know, grief detox you can do and then all of a sudden, you know, hey, I'm back
good.
To back to me again, right? And, you know, for anybody listening who's, you know, gone through a breakup a long time ago, or there's some distance between that then and now, an interesting observation I'm making is I'm coming into that space myself and in a relationship now myself. Oh, well, it seems like it was all worth it. And aren't you glad that happened? Mm. And again, it's like, oh, I wish I would have taken notes on who said like the super inappropriate stuff back then, because I wonder if it's the same people saying that, you know, and in a lot of, you know, grief spaces, you'll hear that meaning is important. Assigning meaning, finding meaning to your loss can help in the healing, but not always. That can be really painful to try to assign meaning to it. So don't try to if it doesn't feel right. And yes, I am in a relationship now, and I love the work that I'm doing that I otherwise, like you, would not be doing had I not had the experience. And it is still the most painful experience I've ever had.
Yeah.
And they're both true.
Yeah, I love it. Yes, that's one thing personally I'm starting to work on more is the ands. I think that's, they're so powerful because so few things are black and white in that way. And that's interesting too, because it's actually been a shift that I have made since starting Breakup Bestie. I think I used to be a big advocate of it's a blessing in disguise. It's a blessing in disguise. And then starting to hear, okay, that's not helpful for a lot of people in that moment. Yes, would I hope someone finds one someday? Yes. But, you know, my goal has shifted more to let's validate what you're feeling right now instead of, you know, trying to find meaning in it. Because sometimes things just suck.
Yes. Preach, sis. Yes. And I wanted to ask you that too, right? So you're a year ahead of me in your devastating breakup.
Yeah.
And so how has the last 9 years doing this work changed you?
Yeah, I think the biggest lesson that I've taken from, and I think what's become super important to me to advocate for through Breakup Bestie is the idea of doing it in a community, like not doing it alone. And that's something that with every life phase that I've gone through in the last 9 years, it has continuously been so incredibly important. Mm-hmm. And also just validating feelings. I think that's, and doing what feels right at the time, you know, mm-hmm. learning how to trust yourself. Like you were saying of, okay, if it feels like I want to, you know, take a shower and you know, have a ritual mm-hmm. that way, I'm going to do that. Or I'm going to try this. And if that doesn't work, I'm not going to do it. Very much like taking what you like and leaving the rest kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's just so important. Asking for help, being in community. That's something that I got from my breakup for sure, was learning how to do that. And it's paid off in other aspects of my life for sure.
Oh, that, yeah, that's really nice. Have you done an episode of just questions for you?
Like personal questions or just breakup questions?
Yeah, breakup questions, like where you field breakup questions. I need to find that episode then. Yeah.
I've done like most commonly asked questions for sure. I've done that episode.
Okay.
And then usually I'll turn it into kind of a mini episode if I get a particular question, but this platform started with me and what I had learned, and what has happened is there's this two-way street of learning from each other. I'm learning from what I'm hearing from people and adjusting that way. And it's really become more of a conversation kind of a thing. And that's how there's been so much change, which is great. I mean, it's been 9 years since I've been through it, and things have changed in 9 years in a lot of different regards. So it's always so important for me to hear from other people
Yeah. And I love that you're still listening to other people, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder too, do you see, this is like something that I'm paying attention to in my work. Do you see a difference, or what differences do you see, I guess is a better way to say it, with men and women going through a breakup?
So I can't remember what, I think I was on another podcast where we were talking about this, but so in the very beginning of Breakup SC, I made it, I'm here to help women. Not even so much of, I don't want to help men, just more, I'm talking about my personal experience and this, you know, so I had it as that. And then what started happening was I started getting male followers and they would say, why does your bio just say that you're helping women? And I was like, and you know, interesting. And then I started having, you know, DM conversations with men. And then I started just straight asking, hey, if you're a guy, can you tell me about your breakup story? And my biggest takeaway is, they're so similar. There's so fewer differences than I once thought. So that's been my biggest lesson, is men have a different way of showing it, but the feelings are the same. You know, it's like, we might have different stories, we might have different circumstances, but at the end of the day, we have the same feelings.
Right. And again, so, same with the grief of it all, right? It's, but men seem to be less, I don't know, willing to share, or there's a little bit more reluctance, I think, to join a community, or at least in my experience only, you know, I'm sure it's certainly not a sample for the world, but that's something I've noticed too. And my hope is that as men and women in all forms of partnership become more literate in the breakup, they'll become more literate in ambiguous grief as well. And, you know, hopefully we'll continue to keep moving that needle forward just a little bit.
Yeah. I hope there's a future where you hear someone in your neighborhood went through a divorce and, you know, there's like more rich, you know, maybe not casseroles, but like something along the lines of, you know, I get like meal trains for friends that have babies. It's like, you know, maybe there's a meal train when, you know, I don't know, someone's moved away, or, you know, I don't know, just different things, or like your friends, the kids go to college. Right. It's like all the friends go over to your house and you have like a little party or things like that.
Yes. I literally 6 weeks ago launched my youngest, and I'm living alone now for the first time in my life, Kendra. I mean, it's incredible. Gosh. I know, I turned 50 and launched my youngest in the same week. And I made this observation, what you're speaking of, where I said, oh my goodness, you know, had I worked in some accounting department, had I worked anywhere for 23 years in my job, I would have at least gotten a cake on my last day. Like somebody would have brought in like some cupcakes or something. And then like, you did it. Thanks for showing up all these years. But as a mother, you know, I just moved her in and then I drove home to an empty house. And I'm like, I should have picked up some cupcakes. You know, it's like, I felt like celebrating and crying. It's such a mixed experience, right? And again, no societal norm kind of, oh, this is what this is called and this is what she's going through, so let's bring over the cupcakes and, you know, the cider, the champagne, something, right? But yeah. So again, create your own rituals, find what works for you, celebrate, cry, find your people who understand your nuance and help you feel better, not worse, little by little.
I love that. Hopefully we can start. And, you know, it all starts with someone listening to this podcast and starting to implement those things and doing that for friends or people in your social circle. Lastly, can you talk a little bit about your book and where people can find you, connect with you?
Sure. Thank you. Yep. So I wrote Soul Broken, a guide book for your journey through ambiguous grief. It was published in the end of 2022. And it even won an award. It won the Gold Award from Nautilus Books, which I'm super delighted about. And it is really the book I wanted. It's the book I went looking for, you know, like you've said too, just wanting an understanding. You talk to a stranger you didn't know, or you called a friend or something I read about you.
Yeah.
Some, you know, somebody you didn't know, but just to connect and understand. And I couldn't find it. So I wrote the book that I was looking for. And while it is framed in my own experience, it's also follows the ambiguous grief process model. So it talks about a variety of activating events. And you mentioned, you know, having an incarcerated loved one. I actually interviewed a terrific woman, Tamika Means, and she's in the book talking about how she had to make the decision to keep living her life and loving her husband who was incarcerated. and not hoping in the wrong direction, right?
Yeah.
But working on herself during that time. And so the book follows several different individuals going through ambiguous grief for different reasons, for different activating events, and talking about how what societal norms they could engage and couldn't. So there are several different experiential exercises you can do throughout the book, or don't. If they don't feel good to you, don't do them. But I give a list of things that were helpful to me, or I found helpful, and resources that I found helpful. And, you know, it kind of follows the internal hope, the external hope, and kind of what happens when you go that route and how to point toward healing. And something as a kind of a final note I'll say is, as I was writing Soul Broken, I was talking about recovery being, you know, kind of the end game here. Like, okay, I'm going to a little journey here and just going to get to a place where I feel like I'm in recovery from my grief, from this experience. And as I was writing, I said, oh, this isn't what it is. We integrate grief. We don't get through it. And when I looked at the etymology of the word recovery, it is rooted with a sense of shame. It is to recover something unsightly, to cover again.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And I'm like, oh, I don't want to pretend this didn't happen. I don't want to cover these years of my healing which has really helped me become kind of a leveled up version of myself, really, right? And so I found the word regeneration. And I feel like going through a breakup and getting to the other side and the other side might be you're just not crying every day, you know, that you're living, you've integrated your grief and you're living. And regeneration is to be born again, to be made better in a spiritual or higher way. And that just really resonated, right? So taking the experience and integrating it and regenerating into a higher version of yourself. So that's what you'll find in the book. And I hope it's helpful for people, along with how you can do a faux funeral yourself. So people can find my book anywhere books are sold. And they can find me on social media-ish, stepping through. Yeah, on the social media platform, Stephanie Sarazen, or on Instagram, which is probably where I'm most active, which isn't to say much, stepping_through.
Okay, perfect. Well, I will link everything in the show notes, but it was so fun talking to you and I love what you're doing and I hope everyone goes out and gets Soul Broken. And yeah, hopefully we can talk again soon.
Thank you, Kendra. Thanks for the important work you're doing and really keep going.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.
If you want to see more companies make things in America, consider buying more things from companies who are already doing that very thing. Companies like American Giant. These guys have been making t-shirts, sweatshirts, flannels, and blue jeans in America for the last 14 years, with cotton grown right here in the USA. That means good jobs for lots of hardworking Americans in factory towns all over the country. Check out their stuff in stores everywhere, or pick up something awesome at American-Giant.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.